Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Every organization, I don't care if it's a tiny startup or a huge corporation, is always fighting this one internal battle.
Oh, yeah, it's a constant tension.
It's how do you keep things running smoothly? You know, the day-to-day work, what we call business as usual,
mm-hmm.
while also making the big disruptive changes you need to actually survive and grow.
And that's the fundamental conflict, isn't it? BAU is all about stability, efficiency, predictable profit. But business change, well, that's where the risk and investment come in. The tool we use for that structured change, is the project.
And that's our mission for this deep dive. We're going to cut through all the jargon and get to the core of a major framework for managing projects, PRINCE2, specifically looking at the latest 2023 thinking.
We want to pull out the foundational stuff, the real why behind the rules, the things that make a project work, whether you're building an app, a bridge, or launching a marketing campaign.
Okay, so let's start with a clear definition. What actually is a project? It's not just a to-do list.
No, not at all. A project is a temporary organization. It's created for one specific purpose, to deliver one or more business products, all based on an agreed-upon business case.
A temporary organization. That framing alone explains so much. So what makes it so different from just, you know, normal work?
Well, we can break it down into five key characteristics. First, and this is the obvious one, a project introduces change. If nothing is changing, you're not in a project, you're in operations.
Right.
Second, it's temporary. It has a clear start and a clear end. The team comes together, delivers the product, and then disbands. Then the new changed BAU takes over.
I can already feel the stress of that. Temporary teams can be tricky.
And that leads straight into the third point.
Yeah.
Projects are almost always cross-functional. You're pulling in people from IT, from finance, from legal.
All with different bosses and different priorities.
Exactly. And that's a huge source of friction because you're disrupting the normal, stable departments.
Okay, but what if you're, say, a retail company opening new stores all the time? After the 100th store, is it still a unique project?
It is, and that's the fourth characteristic, uniqueness. Even if the blueprint is the same, the team is different, the location's different, maybe the local regulations are new, no two projects are ever truly identical.
And the last one?
The last one is uncertainty. Because you're creating something new, you're dealing with way more threats and opportunities than in your day-to-day business. Projects are just inherently riskier.
So we've got this temporary, unique, cross-functional, risky thing designed to create change. How do we even know if it's working? What are we measuring?
PRINCE2 gives us six performance targets. These are the things we control. They answer the question, what does success look like?
Okay.
You've got the classic three, costs, time, and quality.
The iron triangle, cheap, fast, and good.
Right. But we also add scope, what exactly are we delivering, and risk, are we managing those threats and opportunities? And the sixth one, which is more important than ever, is sustainability.
So not just did we deliver it, but did we do it in a way that's environmentally and socially responsible?
Precisely. And the project manager's job is basically to juggle those six things.
And that juggling act, you manage it with something called tolerances.
Right.
A kind of acceptable range of deviation.
Exactly. It's the boundary of acceptable failure.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because setting targets is one thing, but you need a philosophy, some guiding rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to the seven core principles.
And these are non-negotiable. If you follow these seven principles, you are using the method. If you stop doing even one of them, you're not.
Let's hit the first one, which feels like the most important. Principle one, ensure continued business justification.
This is so much deeper than it sounds. A project needs a good reason to start. You know, the benefits outweigh the costs and risks, but that justification has to stay valid for its entire life.
But wait, if the board signed off on the budget for the year, isn't that justification enough?
That's the key mistake people make. Justification isn't a one-time event. It's not just about being affordable. It has to be viable and achievable. The Now Buy campaign example from the source material is perfect for this. The cost was fine. The budget was there.
Right. It was affordable. But when the project board actually looked at the plan,
they realized the way they planned to advertise was never going to reach the people they wanted to reach.
So the project was financially viable, but it wasn't achievable. It wouldn't deliver the benefit.
Exactly. So the justification was gone. And the rule is you have to stop the work. You don't keep throwing good money after bad, even if you're halfway done.
That's a huge discipline to have. Okay, principle two is learn from experience. Again, sounds obvious, but what's the real insight here?
The insight is the critical difference between a lesson identified and a lesson learned.
Okay.
A lesson that's just written down in a report is only identified. It's documentation. To be truly learned, it has to be sought out, recorded, and actually applied to make things better.
And the Lou shopping setback example is just brilliant for this. A construction project gets delayed because they used an old floor plan for the wiring. Lesson identified. Check your versions.
But the project manager didn't just fix it and move on. He got the team together immediately. They figured out why it happened, and then, and this is the crucial part, they audited all the other floor plans for the entire site.
And they found more mistakes.
They found 3 other incorrect drawings and fixed them before they caused any more rework or delays. They took an identified lesson and immediately learned it, applying it in real time.
That's a massive shift in mindset. It's not about a report at the end. It's about improving right now.
It's about building organizational capability, not just a historical record of failure.
All right. Principle 3, define roles, responsibilities, and relationships. Why is this so critical for a temporary project?
Because the normal company org chart just doesn't work. You need a temporary structure that represents the 3 key stakeholders. You have the business interest, the people paying for it, the users, the people who will actually use the thing, and the suppliers, the teams with the skills to build it.
So you're basically creating a mini company just for this one investment.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's layered. You've got the commissioning layer, super senior people who kick things off, the directing layer, that's your project board, like a board of directors for the project. The managing layer is the project manager. And the delivering layer is the team actually doing the work.
And defining that up front stops all the arguments about who's in charge.
It provides clarity, which leads us right into principle 4, manage by stages.
This one sounds a bit like boring admin, but it's actually a really powerful control for the people at the top, isn't it?
It's a vital risk management tool. You break the project into chunks stages. And at the end of each stage, the project board has to make a decision. They look at the results, they look at the plan for the next stage, and they decide if it's still worth investing. It's a stop-go control.
So instead of giving someone a 2-year budget and hoping for the best?
You give them 3 months of budget, and then you check in. It gives you adaptability. Now, there's a trade-off. More stages means more control, but it's also more meetings and more overhead for senior management.
And you can line those stages up with things like the company's annual budget cycle.
Absolutely. That's a common way to tailor it.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. We're talking about giving senior leaders control without them having to micromanage everything. How does the framework handle the day-to-day chaos? This is principle 5, manage by exception.
This might be the most powerful efficiency-driving principle of all. Remember those tolerances we talked about for cost, time, scope, and so on?
Yeah.
Well, the project board delegates authority to the project manager by setting those tolerances for a stage. They say you have a 10% leeway on the budget and 2 weeks on the schedule. As long as you stay within that, you don't need to talk to us.
So they're only bothered if something is about to go wrong.
Exactly. The project manager manages autonomously within those boundaries. They only escalate with what's called an exception report if they forecast they're going to breach a tolerance. The board doesn't want status updates. They want to know about major problems.
That saves so much time for senior leadership. It lets them focus on actual strategic issues. We saw this in the Louis shopping project, right? The tolerances changed.
Yes, exactly. In the very beginning, when there was a lot of uncertainty, the cost tolerance was really wide, maybe plus or minus 40%. But once the design was done and they knew more, the board set a much tighter tolerance for the construction stage, maybe plus or minus 20%. The tolerance reflects the level of risk and certainty.
Brilliant. Okay, principle 6 takes us back to what we're actually making. Focus on products.
This is a mental shift from focusing on activities, doing work, to focusing on outputs, delivering things. You define the end result first, with all its quality requirements.
And we're not just talking about the final thing the customer gets, are we?
Well, it includes everything. Management products, like the project plan itself. Specialist products, which are the user deliverables. And this focus is your best defense against scope creep. Any proposed change has to be evaluated against its impact on an agreed product and ultimately the business case.
Which brings us to the last one, Principle 7, which makes all of this work in the real world, tailored to suit the project.
Right. This is not a rigid, one-size-fits-all methodology. You have an obligation to adapt it. You might change the terminology, use fewer documents, or have more or fewer stages depending on the project's size, its complexity, the company culture, or the delivery method.
And speaking of delivery methods, let's dig into that because this really shows the flexibility. The sources contrast a few different approaches.
For sure. The classic one is the linear sequential approach, sometimes called waterfall. You do all the requirements, then all the design, then all the building. The Louis Shopping Infrastructure Project is a perfect example of this. It works well when you're pretty sure things aren't going to change much.
But that would be a total disaster for building software, where the market changes every 6 months.
An absolute disaster. For that, you tailor it to use an iterative incremental approach, like Agile. Here, you often flip the controls, you fix the time and cost, and you let the scope be flexible.
You focus on what you can deliver in a short burst of time.
Exactly. Like in the Data Knowledge time recording solution example, they had a fixed 3-month timeline and budget. They broke the work into 2-week time boxes and delivered usable software at the end of each one. Planning uses things like backlogs and user stories, which are much more adaptable.
And you can even mix and match them, right? The hybrid approach.
Yes, the FindF product development is a great example. They used a linear approach for the overall project governance and deployment. But for the actual software development part, they used iterative cycles. And because there was so much market uncertainty, the board set very short stages, only 1 month long, so they could constantly check in and change direction if needed.
So no matter which method you're using, problems are going to come up. You call these issues.
Issues are just a fact of life. An unexpected problem, a concern, a formal request for a change. And quality is a big part of managing this. You have to define what good looks like for a product.
And in those iterative projects, how do you define quality when the scope itself is flexible?
It's more of a goal you work towards. You use prototypes and get constant user feedback to refine the product through each iteration. So by the end, it meets the quality standard everyone agreed on. And for those formal change requests, you have a specific tool.
The change budget.
Exactly. It's a pot of money or time set aside specifically to pay for approved changes. It means you don't have to go back to the board for emergency funding every time a small, smart change is requested. It builds in controlled flexibility.
So what does this all mean? We started with this tension between keeping the lights on and changing for the future.
And Prince 2 gives you a common language and a clear structure from the top executives down to the delivery teams to manage that change. It's all centered on delivering agreed-upon products within defined limits or tolerances.
It forces constant reevaluation of whether an investment is still a good idea.
Right. Even for projects you have to do, like for a new regulation, it forces you to analyze the options. Should we do the bare minimum, or is there an opportunity here to get more value for our money? It ensures you're always making a conscious business decision.
And for me, the most powerful idea that ties this all together is that principle of learning from experience. The Louis Shopping example, where they didn't just document a problem, they immediately used it to find and fix other problems.
That's the real mark of a successful learning organization. So we'd invite you to think about this. In your own work, what is the actual process for learning? Does a mistake or a success just end up in a report that no one reads?
Or is there a mechanism to make sure that knowledge is truly implemented right away to make the organization better for the next project? That move from lesson identified to lesson learned, that's everything. That instantaneous application of knowledge, that's what separates the organizations that consistently win from those that are just stuck repeating the past.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.